Okay, so hello. As we just went through, my name's Tim. I work for the Susie part of Novell, soon to be the Susie part of Attachmate. Specifically, I work on the Susie Linux Enterprise High Availability Extension, which is a bunch of software for managing HA clusters. I'm not going to be talking about that today, but I can some other time if people are interested. Rather, I'm going to be talking about Susie Studio, which I've used in my work and I found to be a handy tool. It's a web application for building custom Linux distros. Now, distro is a little bit of a misnomer in respect of the fact that anything you build with Susie Studio is built on one version or another of Susie Linux, be it OpenSUSE or SLES or whatever. It's not a misnomer in that anything that you build has exactly what packages you want on it. You can build a GUI thing or a server thing or whatever, so it's completely customizable. You can use this to build various types of system image or appliance if you want. Appliance is the term that gets used everywhere. Live CDs if you want to have something that you can boot off and demo to people. Virtual machine images in various formats, VMware, Xen, KVM, OVF, VirtualBox, whatever. Disk images that you can just directly write onto a hard disk, or that you can put on a USB key if you want to have a bootable USB key that you take around and run things off. And it will also do Amazon EC2 images, which is a little bit interesting because I think this is in beta at the moment. You can turn it on within Susie Studio. You can actually build an Amazon EC2 image and upload it straight to Amazon servers from within Studio without having to download it and set things up yourself. So I haven't actually tried that, but that's kind of nice. And this is freely usable at susiestudio.com, so you can just go there and you can, if you've got a Novell account, you can log in with that, or you can log in with your Google account or Twitter or Facebook or an OpenID or something like that, so anybody can go and use it. Notable features include you configure everything once, so you can set up the network settings whether you want to boot DHCP or configure the network the first time the thing comes up, or set a static IP address. You can choose whatever software you want installed. You can give it your own branding, so your own boot splash screen and little logo that people see when it comes up. Default set of Unix users and groups and things. You can upload your own extra files or scripts, RPMs, if you've got your own software that you need to be installed on there for whatever reason. You can also pull in software from the OpenSUSE build service, which is a separate project. This is where all the OpenSUSE packages get built, but you can build your own stuff there if you want to. You can put a tarball up there, write a spec file, or you can pull stuff in from the web and it'll get built for you, which is quite nice. The images that you build with Susie Studio live on a Susie server. You get 10 or 15 gig of space to play with for free. They may get deleted after about a week to free up space, but your configuration remains, so you can go back there and rebuild the same thing again if you need to. And once you build something, there's this test drive thing where your appliance gets booted up in a KVM instance somewhere on a Susie server, and then you get a console on in your web browser, so you can play around and make sure it's got everything that you need. And then any files that you've changed can get saved back to your appliance configuration, so the next time you do a build, you've got that final thing.
So in that sense, that means...
Sorry?
Sorry.
You can get a full graphical console.
In the console, you're saying that, for example, you've got that running, you've logged in, et cetera, you change that config.
Yep.
Once it's saved,
yep.
That automatically finds its way back into your build config.
Yeah, you've got to go and tick a box to make it move those files back, but you can, yeah. Reasons you might care about Susie Studio, the two top items on this list are what I've used it for in my work. I have a test cluster that manages some VMs, and I don't really care what's running in the VMs, but I need to know that I can migrate them around the place and test that the cluster's behaving. But I do need some VM images running, so rather than going and installing an operating system from scratch on each one and wasting a couple of hours, I've gone and built one, happens to be an OpenSUSE image, and then I've just gone and DD'd that onto some block devices and thump, 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 I've got a bunch of VMs running. So that's nice. The other thing I've done is I've made a couple of demo CVs, which is SLES with all of the clustering software installed by default, so I can go and take the CV and put it into a few different systems, boot them all up off that, run a couple of extra scripts that I've wrote, and I've got a running cluster. So repeatable deployments of things is good. If you're an independent software vendor, like your pretend you're Oracle or SAP or somebody that ships software ordinarily on a DVD, instead you could package up your software in a virtual appliance VM image on top of Linux, and you can just ship that thing and people can deploy that in presumably your supported configuration immediately rather than having people go and have to install software from scratch and fiddle around with it. Similarly, a hardware vendor, if you're making media center boxes or something, you could build an image with this and just stick it on all of them as they roll out of manufacturing. The other reason you might be interested is if you're a sysadmin and you've been given one of these SUSE appliance things by an ISV and you don't know what the hell it is and they haven't actually configured it to make it easily updatable. I was chatting to somebody on IRC a couple of weeks ago who said that they'd seen at least one of these where they got this thing and they couldn't actually update the software on it. That's not a failing in studio, but it is a failing of whoever it was that configured that thing in the first place. So, anyway, if you end up with one of those, at least you know where it came from.
Did they do something special to
wrap
that up?
I don't know. I don't know who it was. By default, if you actually install Zipper on your appliance, Zipper is like Aptitude, if you're familiar with Debian, it goes and pulls software, installs software and all that. If you actually do install Zipper when you're creating your appliance, by default it'll have the SUSE update repositories all there, so you can log in and run Zipper and install updates and things. But if whoever built the system didn't actually install the package management tools on it, then you've got something that you can't use. So,
do the VMs have any sort of metadata in them so that if you receive one of these things and you load it up on the SUSE Studio, can you separate what they did from the base? Can you say, well, here, they've taken an open SUSE version or whatever and they've added all this stuff? Like, can you easily get duplicates?
Not that I'm aware of out of a VM image, but SUSE Studio can actually this. Leads neatly into the second point on the next slide. I'll answer that in a second. Other things, SUSE Studio is obviously a public website and all the stuff on there is stored on SUSE servers somewhere, and you might not want that if you're a large enterprise or a government or you're paranoid or you have particular regulatory requirements, meaning that you need to build your VMs on site. There is a product that you can buy called SUSE Studio on site, and it's part of the SUSE Appliance Toolkit, and there's some other stuff in there like WebYask, which is a GUI for configuring appliances, and SLMS for managing entitlements and updates and things. So you can buy that from Novell, but the other thing is SUSE Studio is actually a web front end for Kiwi, which is this command line imaging tool, and this is actually what builds the system images behind the scenes. It takes some XML files that describe where the software is and all the configuration of everything, and then you say, clicky, 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 please build me a ISO, and it goes and does it. So SUSE Studio lets you export the Kiwi configuration. So if you've built something in Studio, you can export that, and then you can go and grab Kiwi, and you can go and build it yourself. So if somebody has given you not just a VM image, but if they've given you access to that Kiwi configuration, then you've got something that you can modify.
Sounds like Kiwi things, but kind of metadata.
Yeah. There's also SUSEGallery.com, where if people have built appliances themselves already and shared them, then you can go there and find appliances to do something that you might want to do, and you can clone them, and that gives you all of the configuration that they've set up, and then you can build something off of that yourself. So that's kind of cool. I think that sort of answers your question. So with that, we can do a walkthrough. If you go to susystudio.com, you see this happy robot whose name is Dista, and a bunch of other stuff. If you hit the sign in button at the top of the screen, grey text doesn't look very good, does it? As I said before, you can sign in with Novell, Google, Yahoo, Twitter, Facebook, OpenID, so wherever you've already got an account. And once you've signed in, this is your homepage. Down the left-hand side is appliances you've already created. There's some links on the right to blogs and bits and pieces. If you hit the Create New Appliance button in the top right-hand corner of the screen, you can choose a base template to start on, OpenSUSE 11.3, SLES 11 SP1, or SLES 10 SP3. OpenSUSE 11.4 is being released today, so that should be there. If not now, then very soon. Here you can actually also import a Kiwi configuration if you've got one from something you've built yourself before. It's another starting point. The system, 32-bit or 64-bit, x86 either way, there's no Itanium or power or anything here. so
why
once,
that?
Sorry?
Twice?
I don't know. Most popular architecture? So you choose a template and it sits there for a couple of seconds churning away, and then you get this screen here. You can set the name. On the left hand side you can almost see it's based on OpenSUSE 11.3, 350 megabit disk space, 28 packages selected with a total of 147, so that's 28 base packages and their dependencies. I started with OpenSUSE Juice, or Just Enough Operating System, which is meant to be the minimum bits of Linux that you need to do anything useful. So if we go over to the Software tab, up the top, Software Sources, you can see it's got the official OpenSUSE 11.3 and the Updates repository. This is where you can add other repositories off the OpenSUSE build service, or you can upload your own RPMs, which will be installed into the system at build time. You can also see the list of selected packages there, and down the bottom, if you hit the To Be Installed link, for instance, it'll give you a list of everything that's going to be installed, and the ones with the dark ticks being the base packages, and the ones with the light ticks being the dependencies that were pulled in. Over on the Configuration tab, Time Zone, Locale, how you want the network to be set up, any default users and groups that you want to create. We can see here down the bottom that the root password is set to Linux by default. We can change that, obviously. I tend to like setting these things to ask for the network configuration the first time they boot, because when they come up, assuming you've got a console on them, you get this little cursor interface that asks you whether you want DHCP or an IP address or whatever. But for this example, DHCP will do. Personalize gives you branding, changing the boot splash screen and putting a different logo in. Startup determines whether you're running your default run level. This is just a console in this case. And you can add end user license agreements, which get displayed the first time your system boots up, and if the user doesn't agree to them, it'll shut down immediately if you have that particular requirement. Server settings is a little bit of fun. It lets you set up Postgres or MySQL. If we tick the Setup MySQL box, it gives you the option of uploading a MySQL database dump and configuring users and permissions, so you could ship something with a pre-populated database if you want to. The other thing there on the left-hand side, there's a little error message that says MySQL database configuration has been enabled, but it's not installed. So if you click the little Add MySQL Community Server link below that, that changes, and it shows that it's added four packages, and there's a little View Details link there as well, which you can click on, and that shows you actually the software that's been added as a result of that. desktop settings aren't really applicable in this case. You can have people automatically logged in or start programs by default. Appliance settings is, depending on your VM image format that you choose, the amount of memory that you're expecting your virtual machine to have, disk image size. There's some things down the bottom for configuring LVM if you want to do that. And there's a script that runs at the end of the build. By default, this will only run at the end of the build, and it does things. It actually deletes all the man pages and other documentation to give you a minimal image. So you probably want to change that. But you can edit that there, or you can change it to run that script any time the appliance boots up, so it's quite customizable. There's a files tab, which is where you can upload additional files if you've got, say, extra documentation you want to include, or if you have a binary application that you have in a tarball, you can upload that here, and that'll get extracted to the location that you choose as part of the build. I'll come back to this tab a little bit later as well. And finally, once you've set everything up, you go to the build tab. By default, it'll give you a hard disk image, but there's always other formats there that you can choose from. So if we hit the build button, it thinks for a little while, and you get a progress bar. And this takes it took about 5 minutes to actually do the build there. But. And once that's done, you can hit the download link to download it immediately and deploy it, or if you hit the test drive link, this is where you end up in this test drive thing. And we can see the console here. It's worth noting that anything that you type in here is not actually encrypted, so it's not secure, but there is an option up the top to turn networking on, which means you'll be able to SSH into the system and do things securely. It won't give you network access to the rest of the world, though, so otherwise people would be using this for spam bots and all sorts of horrible things. So the boot runs through, and we're finally able to log in. So we log in as root and then discover a whole bunch of unpleasant-looking locale error messages, which probably means that there's a locale package that's not installed, so we'll do something about that in a minute. The other thing I want to do is edit the message of the day file. So just here, I've down the bottom of the screen, if you can see that, I've echoed some text into the message of the day file, and then I tried to view that with less, which is also not installed. And I started with Juice, which is called Just Enough Operating System, but any operating system that doesn't include less is not enough operating system. So we're going to fix that too. But first, if we go over to the Modified Files tab here, this is a list of all the files that have changed on your system since booting it up in test drive. You can see the SSH host keys that have been generated, other stuff. And up the top is my message of the day file. You can view diffs between what was originally there and what is there now, or you can download copies of these files. Or if you select that message of the day file, and then down the bottom of the screen there's a button that says add this to my appliance configuration. So once you do that, if you then go back to the main CC Studio screen, here in the files list, we can see the message of the day file is there now. So if we jump back to the software screen, down the bottom there's a search for software thing. We type in less, and the bottommost item on the list there is less. So you hit the add button, and that again appears on the left-hand side, showing us that we've added less. And I'll do the same thing for the glibc locale package. Install that as well. Then if we jump back to the build tab, hit the build button again, I'm not bothering you with the progress bar this time, and boot up version 0.0.2 of our appliance in test drive, and log in.
Less, and that must be all the locale.
There's another 100, that locale.
150
Hang on, let me jump back to less. Less added one package totaling 261K. The locale thing added one packaging totaling 100 meg. Now, this is probably why it's not there for a Juice thing, because if you want something that's absolutely minimal to run just one application, you probably don't care about the locale stuff. I don't like those error messages, and I don't care about another 100 meg, but yeah.
So it's on CD.
Yeah.
You can still
access the previous version, stuff like that.
Yeah, you can still go back and you can grab your previous one if you want. Something that you can download the configuration for each one of those. Something that actually would be really good, and I don't know if it's there, is the ability to do diffs between two revisions of an appliance. I'm not sure if that's there yet. I think you can probably do it. You can do an approximation of it yourself by downloading the configuration of each one and comparing them, but it's, you know. There's also this other thing in the bottom left-hand corner, Take Notes, which pops up a little text editor, so you can, you know, put arbitrary text in there if you want. It's kind of cute. In test drive, we've logged in as root, the locale messages are gone, we've got the message of the day, less runs, and so now I'm happy that I've built my appliance. So we go back here and hit the download link, and that gives you a tarball with a VMDK file in it in this instance. So now we can go and deploy it. I happen to be running VirtualBox for no particular good reason, other than that I hadn't played with it much before. So we go and create a new virtual machine. Choose demo. It's OpenSUSE. I'm running it on my laptop, so I'm going to be stingy about memory. We're going to use an existing hard disk image, which is this VMDK file, which Studio produced. Okay. Next. Finish. I have to change a couple of settings. One of them is I'm turning audio off because I don't care and it will whine at me. And it also wants the host IO cache to be on for that image for some reason. And then we boot it up and discover that you can't actually... There it is. So it's the grub screen. And again, this the green background here and that logo are the things that you can replace with your branding, whatever you want. It's cute, but it's kind of boring to look at that, so you can... So this is basically just normal boot. If this was in the disk image format rather than the VM image, the disk image one is smart enough when you boot it up to look at the size of the block device that it's on and automatically expand itself to fill the available space.
So
it's somewhere in that initial boot that happens. You'll actually see it go past finding extents and extending volume and whatnot. Just about there, and don't ask me what that module VM net control not found is. Possibly means that I should have installed something else. Anyway, so we can log in. There's a message of the day. We had MySQL installed here, so that's all running. And you're done. So that's it. It took me 20 minutes or something to configure that, go through the test drive, change something, go back, build it again, download it, and deploy a VM. And if I wanted to deploy this thing multiple times, I just take that tarball and put it in my VM VM guest, and we're done. So this is why I'm doing this talk, because I found this so convenient for testing things in my case.
It's a very nice interface.
Yeah.
I've been building CentOS Kickstart images.
Yeah.
Running CentOS VM as the server, and then kickstarting off, off the server on my desktop machine, and doing all that
by
hand sort of thing. prettier.
So, let me have my keyboard back. Oh yeah, thanks. not so much. No, I have a Zen system at home, which is sufficiently old that it needs to run Zen because it doesn't have VT in it. And I do KVM stuff off my desktop. So KVM, I was intensely annoyed the other day to discover that VirtualBox doesn't let you do USB pass through, at least the one that I've got installed. There is another one, or you need the Sun official one or some extension or other. So I gave up and just used KVM instead.
Yeah.
Okay. We should look at that again. So the last thing I mentioned before, Suzy Gallery. To give you an example, again, for testing some stuff, I created a VM which has an iSCSI target on it, which is just a sparse file in the root directory of it. I had no care for performance. I just needed an iSCSI target that I could run somewhere in a hurry for testing things. So I built a iSCSI target appliance. And when you go and share this, you can set a description and tags and bits and pieces. And then other people browsing around Suzy Gallery, this is what they see. They see my description, a download of my VM, and down the bottom there's a security summary which tells you that I've only used software from official sources and there was no custom software uploaded, and I have uploaded some files but they're not executable. So this gives you some reasonable assurance that you're not about to download a big ball of malware, assuming you trust Suzy, of course, which everybody does. But you can browse around and you can find other people's stuff. There's popular ones. There's a rating system so you can put little, find out what's popular. People can add comments to appliances up there saying that they're crap if they're crap or that they're good if they're good. There's staff picks. To give a few examples of just three completely different things, somebody built this thing that they called Chrome OS Linux, which is not in any means the official Google Chrome OS release, but it is a graphical SUSE-based distro based around the Google Chrome browser that you can go and play with. So that's one thing. Another is GNU Med Live. So GNU Med Live, for another different thing, is this is a bunch of people from Germany, I think, building a free and open source medical records database system. So in principle, if you're setting up a doctor's surgery, you can go and download this appliance and shove it onto a bit of metal and away you go. You've got a patient record database. Here in the security summary, you can see that there's software from some unofficial sources, which means they don't actually ship as part of the base operating system, but you can go and look at, you know, where that's from.
Why would they use an unofficial Postgres?
Good question.
Yeah, you go and look at that.
There might be more stuff in there, like to use using one of the typically on the OpenSUSE build service, there's your base packages for a given version of OpenSUSE, and then there's a separate repository which is where the development for those packages gets done. So there might be a C++ repository and a Ruby one and a clustering one and whatever, and so there will be newer versions of packages in those development repositories than might have shipped on the current version of the official one. So that would be one reason. Or another reason is if there was something that simply didn't exist in the base operating system that they had to go and build separately. And for a third different example, there's a generic LAMP server. If you want to go and deploy something with Apache and MySQL and whatnot on it, grab that. This one was made by James Tan, who's actually one of the studio engineers, so we can safely assume that he knows what he's doing. and it's good to go. And there's Alex, all right.
I didn't realize it was a family pie.
I've got a farmer going. So, that's it. That's my story, or my brief tour.